This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. 5 Hour Energy fan line. 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. I text message here, I think, expresses a lot of what I'm feeling, especially having to rewatch over and over again on SportsCenter this game. This is what sucks. When you lose a nationally televised game, mm-hmm. It's the only thing, especially on Thursday night, it's the only thing people are talking about. It doesn't get buried under a slew of other games. Like, you, at least if you lose this, like the Sunday night football game, for example, the Sunday night football game they're probably going to lose 10 days from now.
Right.
That'll get buried underneath a bunch of other games that day and college football and look ahead to Monday night. Thursday night is this island unto itself where it's the World Series isn't even going on anymore. Like, you got nothing else to sink your teeth into. The Jets getting up off the mat and looking for 30 minutes like the team they thought they were going to be when they traded for Devontae Adams and when they brought Aaron Rodgers in a year ago. That's the story today, man, and you are on the other end of it. You are the one on your back looking up at the lights getting pinned 1-2-3 today.
Even back in the old day, if you'd had Thursday night football but no internet, then the reels from the first half might have all been like one of those wacky NFL Follies films. You got a running back dropping the ball. You got just all kinds of weirdness happening. Running back willingly dropping the ball as he enters the end zone. But no, it just turned into an old school butt whooping in the second half. They just flat out got their butts whooped up and down the field. And the kicker, Kyme Fairbairn, has shown his mortality in the last few weeks. He got iced unintentionally by the Jets last night. The Jets pulled off the most elegant icing of a kicker ever, where instead of calling a timeout, they committed a penalty on a made field goal.
Yeah.
The Texans get half the distance to the goal, can't do a damn thing with it, and then from point blank range, Kyme Fairbairn misses.
Boinks it off the upright. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. The text message, conversations need to be had after losing to this Jets team, completely dropped the ball on national TV. Embarrassing. Yeah, I mean, CJ himself said it. It's embarrassing to do this on national TV.
National streaming.
Yeah, national streaming and TV in the local Houston area. Shout out to Fox 26. Good job last night, fellas. All right, let's get to looking back at some of the high points and the several low points in this game last night. Hey, it was pretty good early on. I think you and I both thought, Seth, that the pressure on Aaron Rodgers would be a big story in this game. Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson against the Jets offensive line that's not been great this year. And you get Danico Autry back, too. He's been back for a couple games. Last night, he showed up, and he showed up early.
Third down and 10 for the Jets from their 11-yard line. Rodgers in the gun. Hall in the backfield. Three receivers left, one to the right side. That's Garrett Wilson. Got to watch him. Stingley ready. And here's Rodgers taking the snap. Here's a big rush, and it's a big sack for the Texans. as DeNico Autry flattens Rodgers inside the two, and the Jets go three and out. There was a party in the backfield with Liberty white-clad Texans defenders.
It was like Autry was playing pass, and, I mean, he excellent pass rush, gets
good.
Right by.
We got the sack. So three and out on the first. I said, okay, well, this is all right. I mean, you know, the Texans didn't do anything on their first possession, but, boy, and that was the theme the whole first half. Aaron Rodgers was under pressure, under siege, and he couldn't pass for any yardage in the first half.
And it was a really nice job by the defensive line running a game inside. Danielle Hunter was collapsing from one side. Will Anderson got good pressure. They turned into – it was a potential near-disaster situation for the Jets. I mean, that's on the two-yard line. Could have potentially been a safety there. Yeah, that was beautiful, all according to plan. DeNico Autry, his steady ascension over the last few weeks as he's come back. All right, here we go.
Here we go.
Probably going to be 28-0 by the half.
You would think, yeah. And then Texans get the ball back. They punt it back to the Texans, and they start to go on a drive. And they – are driving the football. Joe Mixon is just piecing. Joe Mixon had 17 carries for 91 yards at the half in this game. Barely finished with over 100 yards. But in the first half, things were great until they got into the red zone and this happened.
Second and 11 at the Jet 12. CJ to pass, but he's immediately bottled up, fumbles the ball, and the Jets have it. They have it at the 17-yard line. Coming out of the pack with it, it's Will McDonald. We talked about him. He makes a big play here with a fumble recovery as the Texans get...
All right, so that was the first of a handful of chances that the Jets kept giving the Texans last night. Like, they roughed Tommy Townsend to keep that drive alive for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
That
that's
was
right.
The drive where they roughed the punter and kept the drive alive. And the Texans, not only could they not punch it in the end zone, they couldn't hold on to the football. And they fumbled the football away last night.
And I'll tell you what, too, when it comes to just some of the things that could have made it even worse, like there were so many boneheaded Thursday Night Football things. I know this won't be on the highlight reel, but the one punt that the Jets had where Kadar Holman, for God knows what reason, like, looked like he was trying to block the punt coverage guy as he's going back to the 1 yard line. Like, this is high school stuff. What are you doing back there, Kadar Holman? Only bad things can happen if you touch the football there.
That's right.
It was, oh, God.
Yeah, it's not a good It's not a good football team right now. Well, there's still a couple that are positive for the Texans. This was one where he felt like, all right, they might be able to, like, kind of get in here, get into MetLife Stadium, steal a win. They're a little undermanned because the Jets are going to be doing Jets things. Malachi Corley, rookie out of Western Kentucky, has not scored a touchdown. To this point, this highlight, he had not yet scored a touchdown. Gets an end around, takes it into the end zone, or so we thought.
First down at the Houston 19-yard line, Hall in the backfield with Rodgers under center.
Had to force a turnover here.
Loose bunch right side. Rodgers on the flip, the end around, left side, Corley, 15, 10, 5, he's in. Malachi Corley, all the way from the left side to the right side and into the end zone. Texans get a huge break. Corley coughed it up before crossing the plane in celebration. Ball ends up in the end zone. It's a touchback. Texans have it. So they get a takeaway the easy way. Andre, we've seen it.
So there you go. That was a big break for the Texans there. The game was still scoreless at that point. That would have been an early lead for the Jets. And instead, it's not only is it not an early lead for the Jets, but it's one of those things that is probably a big reason why people were chanting sell the team at halftime last night.
That was, again, man, look, Corley, thank you for the gift. Thanks for giving the Texans a chance of being in that game for a little while, be it longer than they otherwise would have been, because that was the defense allowed a touchdown in extreme fashion there. Will Anderson got sucked inside and blocked by a wide receiver. Jalen Petrie had his eyes in the backfield and got pinned down by a wide receiver, the cornerback to that side. just got duped completely. Everybody was out of position. It really bad performance by the defense on that one. Just bailed out 100% completely and totally by a young player doing one of the dumbest things he'll ever do in his entire life.
Yep.
That he has to live with now for the rest of his life.
Yep.
That's you know what? I blame the Texans for destroying that poor kid's rookie debut and his first potential touchdown on his first carry.
Yeah, that kid was a player a lot of Texan fans wanted coming out of Western Kentucky when they were, you know, everybody wanted a receiver in the draft. He was a good player in college. He hadn't done much for the Jets, but the Jets as a team had not done much until the second half of last night's football game. So the game is still scoreless, and at some point in the second quarter early was when Kenyon Green got knocked out because C.J. Stroud landed on top of him in a big schmoz in the backfield. C.J. lands on top of Kenyon Green's shoulder. Kenyon Green gets taken out of the game, and the defense gets the ball back for the Texans. So the very next series, early in the second quarter, after Kenyon Green goes out, you get a drive that's starting out with Kendrick Green at left guard. And similar to last week when they brought in Jarrett Patterson, very first drive, they got a 10-play, 70-yard drive. Yesterday, it was a 98-yard drive that they had. So this was, when have we seen this from the Texans this season so far? A 98-yard drive, largely on the back of Joe Mixon, but they mixed in a little Tank Dell. Ultimately, it would be Joe Mixon taking it into the end zone.
First and goal, handoff Mixon, running left. Mixon, he gets in! Touchdown, Houston!
Made sure he had the ball into the end zone before he drops it on the turf.
A little shade at Malachi Corley there by Andre Ware. made sure he was holding on to the ball. Yeah,
that's a vet move right there.
Yeah.
Of all the things that I admire about Joe Mixon, it's his ability to not self-inflict a fumble on the one-yard line.
Yeah. 98-yard drive, man. Mixon, first half, 17 carries, 91 yards. Second half, 7 carries, 15 yards. Was it as simple as they just went away from Mixon, or were the Jets doing things that you saw that
they
were kind of stifling some things?
The Texans, I got to go back and check with the fact check myself, but it feels like the Jets did when the Jets showed a light box, you know, when they just didn't load up the box, Mixon ran really, really well. When the Jets got more aggressive, both in the pass game and against the run, they did not fare nearly as well. No. So, you know, a loaded box is never an excuse for not running the ball, because good offensive lines and good offenses figure out a way to block it up, and then you can pop an explosive play because everybody's up at the line of scrimmage. But, yeah, look, the Jets, you know, the Jets' defense, unlike the Texans' offense, figures out over the course of the game what the opponent can and can't do. They take away that thing. Last night in the second half, they took away Joe Mixon. And the Texans were left without answers after that.
That's disappointing to me because, as you guys know, if you listen to this show, one of the big things I was harping on, one of the big things I said on Tuesday, I think, was, man, this has been staring me right in the face. The Texans have D'Amico Ryans as their head coach, and they're a well-coached football team, and this Jets operation is a shoddy clown show that has to burn timeouts in the first quarter, that doesn't know how to throw a challenge flag, that they're a mess. And so if nothing else, we can steal one just based purely on the chess game out there.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, that
it was not,
you know,
that.
Ultimately, the chess game really didn't come into it, did it? Not the quick one, not the one that mattered in the fourth quarter or anything like that.
No.
Aaron Rodgers looked like a completely different human coming out in the second half and just thoroughly, methodically, surgically took apart the Texans.
Yes.
One drive at a time. Length of the field after length of the field after length of the field. And, It's a culmination of a lot of things that we'd been worried about. You just thought it was going to show up in the Lions game. I didn't think they would get so thoroughly drubbed. And when you talk about, oh, well, it's Thursday night, short turnaround, they're on the road. Yeah, you're facing a 40-year-old quarterback who's coming off an Achilles tendon tear who couldn't even get the ball snapped on time last week. If anybody should have benefited from a short week, it's the Houston Texans.
Correct.
Instead, what did the Texans do? They used a short week as an excuse to put Kenyon Green out there again. And Quentin Williams was on pace for the Hall of Fame after one quarter of Kenyon Green.
Yep.
The Texans don't get credit for removing him because That didn't do the trick. It took Kenyon Green getting injured for the Texans to try something different. And I don't think Kendrick Green is ultimately the answer. But I'll tell you one thing about that kid. That kid fights. That's the only offensive lineman I've seen out there all year long. Other than I'll get Blake Fisher and Patterson, I feel there's some upside there. But amongst the starting offensive linemen, Kendrick Green showed more grittiness and more toughness than any of them. Paycheck be damned. The dude went out there and looked like he gave a damn.
Yep.
Versus the lackadaisical mess that the rest of those guys have been.
Yeah, no question. We had somebody asking earlier, why was Blake Fisher in the game for a few snaps? Were they disappointed in Laramie, or was there an injury? He had a shoulder at one point during the game. So, at one point, Blake Fisher and Kendrick Green were the left side of your offensive line. And I guess it says everything that I didn't really notice a big difference with the two of them in there than with with Laramie and Kendrick, or Laramie and Kenyon, or whoever's in there.
Yeah.
So, let's skip ahead here as we go back through and do the autopsy on last night. We don't need to hear both of Garrett Wilson's one-handed touchdown catches. We only need to hear the one that's getting replayed over and over and over again. Poor Kamari Lassiter, man. Texans are up 10-7. They got a 54-yard field goal from Kaimi Fairbairn after the Jets had tied the score coming out of the locker room at 7. Kaimi gets a 54-yard field goal. They go up 10-7. And then this was on 3rd and 19. Aaron Rodgers just throws it up and says, go make a play, young fella.
3rd down and 19 now with 13:15 to go in the 4th. Texans up 10-7. Big stop coming up here. 3rd down and 19 across the Texans 27. Rodgers in the gun. One back haul. Three receivers to the wide side right. Wilson short side left. Here's the snap. Rodgers with time. Chucks it long down the left side. And Wilson with a one-handed grab. Was he able to haul it in? No. Out of bounds. It's good on Saturday, but not on Sunday, Monday, or Thursday.
I wish the defense could hurry up and snap the ball, because I don't want to see this again.
It's an incomplete pass.
They're firing it up on the replay board. What a grab. One hand. The left foot is down. The body part.
Oh, that knee comes down.
The knee is inbound.
I don't know if it's in. I think the knee's out.
The left shin hit the ground inbounds before the knee hit out of bounds. It is a touchdown.
I mean, yeah, we're good. We're good, Jordan. Yeah. Catch of the year, man. Like, that was a hell of a catch.
I'll tell you what. And catch of the year, I'm watching it and watching it from the end zone view. You can see where Kamari Lassiter almost, I don't think he thought it was in the realm of possibilities that Garrett Wilson was going to make a play on that ball. Because he was standing there kind of waiting for it. And I don't know if it was whether he just couldn't judge the trajectory or not. But, Kamari wasn't even able to make a competitive play for the ball. He was, you know what happened? Lassiter's kind of backpedaling as he's in, and he was in a good relationship. He could have been in better body position in terms of just his knee bend and everything, I suppose. But he was kind of waiting for – I think it felt to him like the ball was coming directly to him.
Mm-hmm.
And out of nowhere, a human hand emerges into the frame in front of him and snatches it away from him.
It was a hell of a play, man. Garrett Wilson,
I didn't appreciate how good a catch that was until I rewatched after the game. I was still too focused on the shin itself. But, yeah, call by Andre, realizing that there was something there.
Yeah. And poor Vandy, because it was such a good call when we thought it was incomplete. He's like, maybe on Saturdays, but not on Sundays, Mondays, or Thursdays. Or Saturdays during the latter part of the season, or Christmas Day on a Wednesday this year. He didn't say that. But if he wanted to be completely correct about it, he would have added those. All right, so at that point, it's 14-10. Jets on the catch of the year by Garrett Wilson. Texans get the ball back, though, and it felt like, okay, a very first play, I believe. If not the first play, then the second play. But the Texans get the ball back. And a little bit of the magic that we used to see on the regular last year.
First down, Texans from their 26, down 4, 12:49 to go in the fourth quarter. Here's C.J. Stroud under center with two receivers left, one to the right, Joe Mixon in the backfield. Stroud fakes the give, steps out to the left. squares up, throws deep down the left sideline. Tank Dell with the catch inside the 25-yard line at the 24.
And just like that, here come the Texans. Tank Dell was able to hit another gear. He thought it was going to be...
All right, so that was... Yeah, man, I felt like, okay. That, you know, the Texans that we saw at the end of the Jacksonville game that were able to put together a drive, you know, some of the stuff we saw last year with CJ in the fourth quarter where you felt like, you know, like, okay, yeah, we got one of those dudes, man. Like, you just can't leave an opening for him. He hits that 50-yard play to Tank Dell. And unfortunately, that series, that possession ended with the sequence you were just talking about, Seth, where the Texans kick a field goal to make it, they kick a field goal to make it 14-13, but there's a roughing the John Weeks that the Jets committed. So the Texans appropriately take the points off the board, even though the old school people would say, I don't know if you take the points off the, they take the points off the board and they go for the touchdown. They don't get it. So they line up an even closer field goal and boinkaroo right off the left upright.
I know the old school philosophy of don't take the points off the
stupid.
Board, but it was so close to that's a point blank. That's an extra point at that point kicking that. The your chance at getting four more points than you have at that point far supersedes anything else.
You're down 14-10. A touchdown puts you ahead. Yeah,
I got zero issues with that. No. Kaimi Fairbairn's got to make that kick.
Yes,
you know, it's just flat out. He's got to make that kick. That was just way too easy. That play itself. Good job by Tank Dell on a stutter and go and got past DJ Reed. CJ had to make that throw on the run. Yep. By design, they were running a boot.
Yep.
Dalton Schultz did just good enough a job to wheel his guy out of the right way, but CJ made that throw on the run. You know,
to
like
his
running
left, to
forward.
His left.
And running forward too at that point.
Yeah.
It wasn't even just like kind of drifting to his left.
Yeah.
That's the other part of the passing offense that I can understand what Bobby Sloak is doing by necessity, which is, okay, they're trying to get CJ on the move. The problem is when you go face good defensive backs and you're rolling CJ out, it reduces everything to a half field. And if they know what you're doing, then they can cover everything up. That was a good job by Tank Dell on that play and a really nice throw by CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
It just wasn't enough from everybody else in the game.
Yeah, the silver lining, I guess, is in one of the silver linings in this game is it was good to see the old Tank Dell back. You know, that makes me feel good, especially considering that Nico Collins is going to be back pretty soon. Let's play one more here. The final salvo, the final dagger, and really what I'm guessing in New York today they're talking about as, okay, this is what we traded for with Devontae Adams.
Rodgers in the gun. Here's the snap. Rodgers throws quickly downfield. Adams drops it in the bucket. 10-5 touchdown, Jets. Rodgers just threw it up in the air and let Adams run to it. And he ran into the end zone for the third Jet touchdown of the night. Rodgers, 3 touchdown passes. He has more on Thursday Night Football than anybody in history.
Jalen Petrie in coverage. Go.
Yep. Look, I mean, this is just what we feared and what we predicted was that, man, Jalen Petrie is really good in his role when they ask him to be a nickel linebacker, to be a guy that's blitzing. Hey, you can go out and play the slot. Sure. But the Texans line up in single high coverage with everybody up at the line in man coverage. And when Jalen Petrie is your actual slot corner, this is why I'm so hesitant to call him a slot corner as opposed to a nickelback. He's not the guy. Versus receiving cores like the group of corpses that the Bills rolled out the other night, then yeah, he's okay in that regard. When you've got him up against Devontae, and I was expecting, okay, was this like a cover zero blitz or something? No. They sent one extra dude, and everybody was single high, everybody was manned up, and yeah, you had Jalen Petrie against Devontae Adams. And I don't think I can fault Kalen Bullock for not getting over there quickly enough or anything. It's just, is what's going to happen. This is why I asked Nick Wright for a defensive back, a cornerback, preferably.
Nick Caserio.
I asked Nick Wright, too. I texted him. Said, Nick, if you're going to do one thing on your national platform, it's go get the Texans a defensive back,
yes,
please.
Yeah, please. Please make that happen. So that was it, man. Those are the highlights from the game. 21-13, the final score.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I guess the one play that we don't have on the one play that we don't have on the sheet here, because it's just it shows up on the box score as an incomplete pass by Joe Mixon to C.J. Stroud.
Oh yeah,
yeah. This was at the 9:07 mark of the fourth quarter. So this was the drive that ended with the missed field goal. This was the drive that had the roughing the snapper penalty that we were just talking about. The Texans get the ball. They move it down inside the they move it down to the Jets' 10-yard line. And it's 2nd and 7 at the Jets' 10. There's 9 minutes to go in the game. The Texans are trailing by 4. And for some reason, Bobby Slowick picked this juncture in the game. Crucial juncture where in a game where points are clearly at a premium, he is putting the game into the hands of Joe Mixon, which I have no problem with if they're handing the ball off to Joe Mixon. But he's at 2nd and 7 at the Jets' 10-yard line. Direct snap to Mixon, and I'm like, okay, Wildcat here seems interesting. I mean, the handoff seemed to be working. No. It's a Wildcat so he can throw a go route to C.J. Stroud in
it's
the corner
a
of the end
zone. Dude, it's the... You're running like the least efficient play in football when quarterbacks are running it.
Right.
That trick play was to have C.J. go beat a defensive back in off coverage.
Yeah.
On a fade?
You gotta let your playmakers go make plays. Mixon and Stroud are two of the best playmakers on this team. You gotta let them go make plays.
I try to be careful about criticizing calling a trick play in general. Because, hey, nobody had an issue with the fake play, the trick play when Stephon Diggs scored a touchdown against the Bills, right? Or, no, who is it? Whoever that was against, the Bears. That was great. All right, good job. Good play design. Unless somebody screwed up and wasn't where they were supposed to be in their route, this looked like they were asking just Dan Marino to line up and be like Dan Marino. Like Dan Marino is Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
Like, no, the degree of difficulty on this was very, very, very high.
Right.
Unless they completely duped the Texans and the cornerback just left C.J. Stroud completely and totally unalone. By the moment the ball was snapped, that should have been dead in the dirt.
Yeah.
And whatever the backup plan on that play was, I can't believe it was executed properly. That couldn't have been the plan.
Here is the one of the very basic things about what they did there to me is the fact that they did it on 2nd and 7. And this is so sad that I'm saying this, that 7 yards feels as daunting as it is in the second half of football games for this team. But it's 2nd and 7. If you throw an incomplete pass there, which they did, you now have to convert a 3rd and 7. You know what I mean? Like, if they did that on 2nd and 3 or 2nd and 2, I'd be like, all right, well, you know, this is still a manageable down. It's 3rd and 7 in the second half of football games, especially down at the 10-yard line where everything is so smushed in and compressed down there. It just made no sense. D'Amico was asked about this after the game, and I have no idea if this is how he really feels about it or if he's just protecting Bobby Slowick in this situation. Like, ultimately, D'Amico's got say over everything. I suppose he could have said, we're not running a trick play down here. What are we doing? But here was D'Amico Ryans when asked about it after the game.
Yeah, that play there, Joe takes the ball and he's, you know, simulating a run there and trying to get a throw to CJ. Didn't get the look that we wanted, didn't execute it the right way, you know. Everybody, trick plays are great when you execute them, right? And then everybody's a genius when you run trick play and it doesn't work, then everybody's looking like why you call the play. So it's you take a chance on those plays. If they work, great. If they don't, hey, not so great.
Hey, Seth, scratch-offs are great when you scratch them off and there's $20,000 underneath it. You know, nobody criticizes you when you do a scratch-off card and the prize is $20,000, but and you go to try to pay for your kid's education with a scratch off and it doesn't work, and all of a sudden I'm a dummy you know. But if it works,
it's just part of the when you talk about the execution too. It's all right. Yeah, they forget who their offensive line is because Kendrick Green is pulling on that play, but his arrival to lead Joe Mixon is slow because Juice Scruggs gets tangled up with Kendrick as he's pulling, and then the right side of the offensive line is getting blown back by the defensive tackle. Dalton Schultz is trying to give a little jab to Hassan Reddick, but Reddick just gets upfield. So Joe Mixon is trying. Hey, guess what? The guy throwing the football is under pressure. All right? Is that a big shock and surprise to you?
Joe Mixon's going to get hurt.
The guy's under. Even if they had bit on the play fake completely, I think Joe Mixon gets tackled for a loss if it was a run on that. It just, these guys can't execute anything properly.
It's crazy, man. I can't believe like this is the same team that had us all so electrified this time last year. Like Seth, week nine of week nine. You know what week nine of last season was? 470 yards and 5 touchdowns against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is by and large the same team that did that last year. I know they had no Nico yesterday, but that like this is like overall like it, let's not act like last night was this outlier. Like it's been some version of this way all year long, and the second half issues have been an issue. Other than two games, that's been a problem all year.
The inability to score touchdowns in the second
half.
They
just don't do it.
So what? So in seven of the nine games they've played, they haven't scored a single touchdown.
They've scored 6 touchdowns in the second half of games this season. 4 of those were scored in the first Colts game and the Patriots game.
Okay.
So in the other 7 games, they've only scored 2 touchdowns in the second half.
You're just cherry picking negative stats.
Fine,
there,
yeah,
you're
that's
clearly obviously. Yeah, that
you know what? No. You're right. I should just keep it simple. They've scored 6 touchdowns in 9 games in the second half.
That's bad enough. Right.
Yeah, I don't need to get cute. You're right. I don't need to get cute. That's unacceptable. I don't need to get cute at all. 6 touchdowns in the second half of games is a complete abomination. And a pox across the entire offensive coaching staff.
It's hilarious that you're like even on a trick play, a gadget play where you're trying to help the offensive line out by giving them some gadgetry. Maybe if you just stand in the right spot, this will get blocked upright.
Oh my God.
But Tytus Howard and Shaq Mason get blown back by the defensive tackle enough that it disrupts Kendrick Green's pull, and he can't get out to block Hassan Reddick, and Joe Mixon has to throw the ball under duress to a quarterback who is very well covered by one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, like it just, we'll criticize the trick play because it seems poorly designed and poorly executed given the people you have on the field. Oh.
It was at a stupid time to do it, too. I mean, it's the fourth quarter. This has got to have it time. Like, this isn't midway through the second quarter where the two teams are kind of feeling each other out a little bit still, like a boxing match. You know, like they're kind of feeling their way through it. This is in the fourth quarter of a game where all of a sudden in the second half, possessions themselves are at a premium. There were only 2 possessions between both teams in the third quarter of this game. That third quarter took like an actual 25 minutes of lifetime. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That 15 minutes of football went by like that. It's 9 minutes to go in a game on the road that you are trying to steal, that you have not been able to score in. It's 14-10. You're down by 4. It's not 34-30 where everything's working that day for everybody.
Yeah.
And I understand the concept behind trick play sometimes is, look, the conventional stuff's not working, so we got to try something here. Not there and not that, and not with putting C.J. Stroud out in a route. Get out of here with that. Like, what's C.J. going to go up and high point a ball in the back of the end zone?
And not to mention even, like, okay, what are we hoping that, man, maybe he can catch one as somebody crashes into his ribs and he can make a one-handed grab himself?
Yeah.
That's
so dumb.
I'm just so disgusted by the thought that somehow you're gonna pull the, what's the name of those machines that are way too complicated, you know, where you got like pulleys going and everything, and the junior high kids will do it as a project.
Oh, I forget what they're called. I know what you're talking about.
Somebody,
yeah,
text in 713-57.
Where you drop like a pinball at the top of it here, and it, yeah, slides down a ramp and goes
up. That collapses
up this.
A house of cards. Text it falls in. Into a, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Text
a Rubberg something. Rubberg something. Rubberg. I mean, yeah, it's that. It's that. It's what that is.
Yeah.
Me trying to figure out the name of that damn contraption. That's Bobby Slowick.
That's exactly
calling
right.
That play last night.
That's exactly right.
Put in the Rube Goldberg. Mm-hmm. Put in the Rube Goldberg.
I'd love to know what that play is called, because I got a few.
It's the Rube Goldberg.
Yeah.
Oh. It was. It was the Rube Goldberg. Except it was the first. Usually when they film those things for the TikTok, it's like 400 attempts before,
oh,
they get,
yeah,
it right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So we've only got three more of
Rube
those.
Rube Goldberg, take 315. Action.
Oh, I actually came up with that on my own eventually without the help
so
of the text.
That's what it
line,
is,
the
huh?
Rube Goldberg
that's
machine.
What it's,
yeah.
That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Here was C.J. Stroud.
The first win of the evening.
Nice job. Here was C.J. Stroud on the trick play.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, we had that play lined up. We thought it was a good look. And, you know, we got to do a better job of selling the run and, you know, making the DB fall asleep. And, you know, I got to find a way to maybe go just catch it. I thought I got held, or I'm not a receiver, so I don't know. But, you know, I thought they got a couple calls that we didn't get. But at the same time, you know, at the end of the day, man, like, we can go this call, that call. We didn't win the game, and we got embarrassed. We got kicked from point A to point Z. So we got to get a lot of things fixed.
Let me tell you another thing.
Yeah.
Sell the run. I'm watching the play right now. What freaking – I got to watch my language here. I want to know. I'm looking at the blocking right now. I want to know what haphazard, idiotic, stupid dullard of a linebacker, safety, or cornerback – is going to fall for the run on this play where they're clearly, I'm watching the offensive lineman. No, like you take one step and you're like, nope, this is not there. This is pass protection. They're clearly no bogus. Oh, it's a, you're a genius when it works out. This thing wasn't going to work out. This was not going to work out. There's nothing about the design of this play, the execution of it, just any of it that was conceived in a good spot.
Are you?
The only explanation is that everybody was drunk last night.
Yeah. Are you? I wish
that's
I
the
was,
only one I'll yeah, accept.
No, I wish.
Turns
I was
out
drunk
we all got drunk before the game.
I wish not all of us. I wish I was drunk last night. Are you saying that there was no inkling at all that they were ever going to run on that play, or it was a poorly executed? Like they were trying to sell the run, but it was just a bad sales job.
They're trying to sell the run, yeah. And I mean. There's nothing. I mean, this defensive line, this offensive line never looks like they're out to do bad things to people or anything.
Nope.
But no, they're notably very passive in this.
Yeah.
And I think maybe you're hoping is that, okay, they're trying to make it look like pass, but Joe Mixon's going to run to the outside or something. But no, I think everybody's eyes immediately, one step into this read, would have their eyes to the left. And on any potential receiving threats. Who's the other receiving threat? Only C.J. Stroud.
C.J. Stroud.
Just C.J. That's it. That's the.
He played receiver really, in sixth grade.
Let's really put him into a bind in coverage. And what are they going to do? Oh no, it's only C.J. Stroud out on route.
The funny thing about the funny thing about that is, and this is no disrespect to C.J.'s athletic ability, but he's not even one of those quarterbacks where his calling card is his pure athleticism. Like Lamar Jackson, the scouts or the, you know, the pundits were literally saying he should play wide receiver in the NFL before, yeah, he came into the league. Anthony Richardson's 6'5" or whatever and can probably jump to the moon. I could see you throwing a pass to Anthony Richardson or somebody like that. Like C.J. Stroud's magical superpower, at least it was until the last few games when the offensive line has started to ruin him, has been what his right arm can do, not mm-hmm. the ability to go up and catch footballs.
No, and I think like what you're hoping is that DJ Reed all of a sudden is going to be the dumbest cornerback on earth and think that, oh, yeah, they're going to run to the weak side of this formation with the quarterback right here, and I'm going to be too dumb to know that he's a receiving threat. And
let's do people.
They think everybody's as dumb as they are.
They got to, man,
the bye week comes. This Bobby Slowick ain't it, man. Right now, Bobby Slowick ain't it. Chris Strouster, the offensive line coach, he ain't it.
Nope.
Nothing you can do about the offensive tackles. You already paid those guys. And I know that, hey, their PFF pass protection grades are swell. Yeah. Yeah.
Still?
Go ahead.
Are we sure?
Yeah, they're, yeah, yeah.
Are we sure?
Yeah, they're...
All right, let's... There is a lot of anxiousness and a lot of nervousness on the text page here. The one big thing, a name from the past that is getting invoked here, I want to run this by Seth because he played with this name from the past. We will get to that.
Oh, I know what's coming here.
Yep. Be prepared.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln at Katy Freeway. 1 mile west of the Beltway, exit Kirkwood, under the giant American flag. It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Football Friday. 5 Hour Energy fan line, that's our text page. 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. Simply put, the O-line is ruining our offense, ruining CJ, and ruining our season. When are Nick and D'Amico going to wake up and make some changes? They've got, I don't know what changes exist in-house other than sticking with Kendrick Green or hoping that Jarrett Patterson's brain gets better and putting him in there.
Yeah.
This is no doubt a big 4 or 5 days coming up for Nick Caserio here as the GM of this football team. Like, you put this team together to compete with the big boys, and they're not competing with the big boys right now.
There's the whole, and the whole thing is too, and I know that D'Amico's going to say, and CJ will say, that it's a group effort and a group operation, that yes, the offensive line deserves criticism, and that's, but they're going to say, okay, it is also a group effort. There are things that the running backs, the tight ends, everybody else needs to do better. That first sack by DJ Reed, I mean, Mixon ran right past DJ Reed and didn't recognize that it was blitz. Because, like, CJ's looking for Mixon. Mixon's on an angle route. You got to get your eyes on CJ. You got to give him your eyes. Because by the time CJ, you know, CJ recognizes that it's corner blitz, but he's looking for Mixon. Mixon's still executing his cut. Yeah. Like, no, get your eyes around on CJ Stroud. Give him an option. So it's, Joe Mixon does great things as a runner and did great things last night in the first half at least, but it's multiple little things like this. That there was no blocker for that corner blitz, which is what happens when you send corner blitzes sometimes. The running back's got to get his eyes back on CJ and give him an option, but CJ had none of it.
Yep.
So
we're here for you, man. We're here till 10 o'clock for you guys, and keep texting in to the 5 Hour Energy fan line. The texts, and we're getting a ton of texts today, a ton. The one of the big things that I saw last night, Seth, I got tweets from people. We got calls about it on the post-game show. It was mentioned a few times, and I'm seeing it today. And this is longtime Texan fans that are feeling this. And I don't know that I'm feeling this way necessarily yet, but I understand the concern when you've had a highly drafted young quarterback and they get shell-shocked because of poor offensive line play. And I'm seeing the name David Carr quite a bit over the last 24 hours. And the concern that CJ is reminding me of David Carr in the seasons where he was getting his head bashed in. And I know it's a very nuanced thing with David Carr and all the sacks that, yeah, the O-line was part of that, but David held on to the ball a lot, all those things. But undoubtedly, you can certainly hypothesize that a big reason David Carr wound up being a failure as a franchise quarterback in the NFL was because he was getting destroyed back there early on in his career. CJ is getting, at least over the last window here of a few games, he is getting destroyed physically and maybe psychologically to that level right now.
He's getting destroyed, and there's not a lot of options that I think Slowik is giving him to avoid getting destroyed. That when the offensive line, because like the play we just discussed, the DJ Reed blitz, there's not an answer. But sometimes when there's going to be a blitz where it's three defenders on two blockers, and that's just the way it goes. But CJ had no options at that point. There was nobody that was open or even looking for the ball downfield by the time he got in duress, and certainly not over the middle. And some of that just ends up being, okay, when Nico Collins comes back, at least you've got slants over the middle. Is anybody else incapable of running slants on this football team?
Must be.
Are they that decrepit in the wide receiving core right now?
Yeah.
But it's across the board, and this is where it falls back on Bobby Slowik. I don't care who you have or don't have. There are a lot of teams out there in the NFL right now who don't have Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs on their in their receiving core. Lots of them. Pretty much 100% of them don't have Nico Collins or Stephon Diggs
right now,
in the receiving 100%. Core, and yet they manage to score more than 13 points against the Jets.
Some of them even score in the second half.
That's the one I'd like to see. The Texans scoring in the second half. How many teams have scored actual touchdowns in the second half without Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins? Quite a few.
I'm going to track that this weekend. I'm gonna count up how many teams this weekend
scored touchdowns without Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs on their roster.
Because this is the first weekend that we haven't had either of those two guys, you know. So I'm gonna see what that looks like and see if teams are actually able to do. I don't know if I believe you on that, Seth. Until I see what happens this weekend in the NFL, I don't know that I totally believe you that teams can score touchdowns without Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins.
Look, I'd love to just think that anybody could line up and win a game by scoring 13 points, but it's hard. It's hard in the NFL. It's hard to win these games, you know?
I've heard it's hard.
Yeah, 13 is plenty, sure.
Yeah. I've heard it's hard to win, and as you know, as I say, it's hard to win in the NFL, and yet somehow 16 teams every weekend
manage to
pull it off. It's incredible.
It's like trying to find to solve an unsolvable equation or something, and yet every single week, 50% of the teams usually will win a game.
Usually.
Sometimes there's a tie.
Sometimes there's a tie, which is a semi-win. But nevertheless, are you concerned? Is there any validity to you to the – the people bringing up David Carr are bringing it up within the context of CJ Stroud is going to get ruined here. Do you have concern?
Sorry, I forgot about David
Carr. That's okay. Do you have concern that you were a teammate of David Carr's? You watched it up close.
Yeah.
Do you have a concern that if this continues, that CJ now is the magical quarterback that we saw as a rookie is all of a sudden ruined in some way?
No, I don't think he's going to be irreparably damaged or anything because he's already shown good pocket presence and awareness. I think I worry more about quarterbacks, especially coming out of college, who never have a chance to develop any kind of a pocket awareness. I think CJ got a lot of that already and has developed a lot of that. I think right now there's times where, and this falls back on Bobby Slowick, I think there's too many times where he doesn't have answers. So there are times, like in the play we were just talking about, he really didn't have any answers on that corner blitz. It was going to be unblocked, and he didn't have any answers for where to go with the ball, so he's going to have to scramble. And like that's where the double whammy of bad offensive line play plus just the quarterback not having that many options, and they don't want him to do that much pre-snap. We've heard CJ a couple times in the last couple weeks talk about how he'd like to be able to do more pre-snap. I think probably along the lines of diagnosing blitz, run some hard counts to maybe sniff some things out. And part of it is, I don't know if they're just kind of trying to bring him along slowly as a younger quarterback and not put too much on his plate. But I think part of it too is it's hard to run hard counts at home or on the road when you can't trust your offensive line to hold their water.
No doubt.
Laremy Tunsil gets another false start last night. Congratulations.
Yeah.
He's back, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
he's back. We're back to full board Laremy.
Yep. Interesting suggestion on the text page. Put Patterson at center when he comes back. Put Kendrick Green at left guard and see how that works. Patterson was a viable center last year when he played those first eight games. For a rookie, the first eight games. I'm not saying he was Dermonti Dawson or anything like that.
Plus, I don't think Juice Scruggs, I need to see with competent guard play next to him. Because a center in a lot of regards is only as good as his
guys.
Who he's got next to him. Yeah, a good center is either using or feeding guys to him. And right now, like, there's no part of Juice Scruggs that needs to be feeding a block to Kenyon Green or anything. So I don't want to mess with it too much. I'd rather have Juice Scruggs continue to get snaps at center and have Patterson at left guard. See how that goes. Or they trade for somebody, a veteran they can trust.
Yeah, we'll see. Next 4 days, man. Trade deadline Tuesday. We'll talk about that in the 8 o'clock hour. Does the shopping list change at all over the last few days or really over the last several hours for what you'd like to prioritize for Nick Caserio? We'll hit that in the 8 o'clock hour, but let's sort of reset here as we head into the 8 o'clock hour and hear from D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans has been telling us, hey man, this is all fixable. These are communication errors along the offensive line. We can fix this. Nothing's gotten fixed. Is this a different D'Amico Ryans that we saw last night in the post-game press conference? We'll let you be the judge, and that is coming up next.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.